so serious.
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game? Yeah!
Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah. All right, we're doing this again somehow. What are we, like 80-something episodes into this?
Yeah, we're like 81 or 82. I keep thinking at like every time we get to a five, you know, I keep thinking, oh, I should try to remember to mention that on the podcast and we'll celebrate it. Well, let's try to keep an eye on 100. You know, we're coming up there sooner than later.
Do you ever find you tell people like I have a podcast and they say, what is it about? And you're kind of like, well, I have 82 episodes, you know, like
it's been about a lot, man.
It's been about a lot. We talked about a lot.
Yeah, I do. And generally, the people who most often put me in a difficult situation when they ask what the podcast is about are the like podcast services, because they always want me to pick a specific category.
Right.
There's no generalist category.
Yeah, we're generalists here at the Toy Department, which is the name of the podcast that we are on. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky.
Oh, hey.
Yeah, we probably should mention that.
It took you a while to get there this week.
I know.
I feel like that's one of the first things you usually say.
Pretty much right off the bat. Yeah. All right, so I guess we had a request.
Oh, yeah, while we're playing Get to Know Your Hosts.
Yeah, we had a request for an update on the 5-2 diet.
Yeah, you talked about your new diet, like, what was that, a month ago now?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So, a month's diet. How's that going?
I've lost 55 pounds.
That's not true. You don't have 55 pounds to lose.
That's not true at all. The real answer is I made it one day, but not for the reason that you think. I actually had another listener who's like a professional fitness and nutrition person that is like, you're being crazy. Send me your food log for a week. You know, everything that you eat, what time you eat it, and I'll fix this. So I decided I was going to go with the fitness expert over the advice of Jimmy Kimmel.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, now I do things like drink protein shakes. I drink a lot of protein shakes.
Yeah.
And I work out. So, and, you know.
But the whole point, I thought the whole BCAAs point of the Kimmel diet's appeal was that it was like
slovenly most of the time.
Yes, enjoyable, and not based on doing things like having protein shakes. Yeah.
I'll say a couple things. First off, you know what's also not enjoyable? Starving yourself. Starving yourself is not enjoyable.
Yeah, see, it's funny because I'm the sort of person that will like drink a bunch of coffee in the morning, get going on a busy day and forget to eat and like end up not eating a ton on a day. Yeah. So like the idea of a couple days of fasting a week doesn't sound terrible, but it's very different when you like set out to not eat.
Yeah. And look, I'm still very much in a place where, you know, I feel like I could, you know, jump off and it, you know, like I went to a music festival this weekend. Outside Lands, which in addition to the music has tremendous, tremendous food. And on top of that, I had some friends from out of town. And you know, there are a million, Bay Area restaurants that I wanted to show people. So I ate like crap for like 3 days and I'm pretty okay with that, you know, under the current plan. So I don't feel like, because I'm take pretty good care of myself most of the week, that if I jump off every now and again, like it's not too bad. You know, if you're actually thinking about trying it, I was kind of joking. I didn't last very long for the reasons that I described, but like the day of fasting wasn't that bad. I ate like 2 chicken breasts, you know, 1 for lunch, 1 for dinner, had some popcorn, drank a lot of coffee, and just kind of worked and passed the time. And, you know, I got to about midnight, and I was like, you know what? It's midnight. Now I can eat whatever I wanted. But I kind of like held out till the morning and had a normal day. And I think I could do this diet. I think if you're thinking about whether you could do the diet, you could if you wanted to.
Right. Right. Well, I was more interested in how effective it was.
Yeah.
Which you have really ruined my small sample size research on that.
Look, it is not entirely impossible that I will go back to it at some point. So, you know, maybe we'll have an update there.
Okay. Well, let's revisit if you ever return to the diet. Otherwise, if you want to, you know, send your ad hoc free of charge dietitian my way, you just let, you know.
Okay.
I'm here. I'm here gaining weight, so just let me know.
just slowly over here adding pounds.
And by the way, you said in there somewhere, like, I take pretty good care of myself during the week. I don't. So, you know, if you want to sell me as a challenge to your dietitian.
Yeah. All right. I could see that. Should we talk about Outside Lands at all?
If you want. Highly mediocre? That's what I've heard and had predicted.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I think of it as – I don't know if, like, the takeaway that I got from it was mediocre.
Let me ask you this. Was it more old Chella than Coachella?
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose. Yeah. Although
– I think that's really the – that's really what I'm hearing.
I think a little of that is unfair because I think Coachella makes a very conscious effort to be young. I think that Outside Lands makes a very conscious effort to be diverse. It's not like.
Do you think they succeeded in that this year?
I mean, look, I know they had two Rock and Roll Hall of Fame headliners, but it's not like the bill was dotted with retirees. You know what I mean?
No, you're right. That's true. That's fair.
Yeah, and Gorillaz have been around for a minute too. I get it, but like.
Tribe Called Quest, Gorilla. I mean, I'm looking at the poster right now, okay? I've literally never heard of Above and Beyond.
Right, because they're for the kids.
Okay, but other than them, of those two top rows, Lord and I guess Above and Beyond are really the only new acts. Alt J, I guess, is newish, but I mean, even Fleet Foxes they're old now. Fleet Foxes, Queens of the Stone Age, Metallica, The Who, Gorillaz, Tribe Called Quest. These are bands for people over 30.
Maybe Fleet Foxes. I don't know. But I think that they do tend to be a more general interest festival than some festivals, which are, you know, exclusively exist to, you know, for youth culture. So yeah, in that sense, I think it's always going to be a little bit older, but like there were plenty of things for the young folk too. And I got to say, like, I mean, look, obviously the big disappointment was that Tribe didn't play, and that Queens of the Stone Age didn't play. Yeah. Oh, you didn't hear about that? Sorry.
I didn't. No. All I heard was like general comments.
They canceled twice, actually. The first was Friday night. They said due to travel issues or something, and then they were rescheduled for Saturday and then canceled that. And then they issued an apology in the LA Times that was basically like, we were grieving about Fife, and we just didn't feel like traveling. What? Yeah, that's a serious thing that happened. So
the LA Times? Why
in the
LA
Times. Yeah, no, I don't really, all of it's very weird. And I look, you know, I think we all learned the loss of Fife, and he's our brother, you know what I mean? And like, think, you know, we're not in the band, and I get it. And, you know, everyone's process is their process. But also, like, it's been a minute.
It's been a minute, yeah. And this has been scheduled for a long time.
Yeah. Like, I don't, you know, I don't know. I can't walk in their shoes, but it seems strange.
Okay, so here's what I would like to do now is I would like to throw some names from down the bill at you that I would have gone to see, some of which I'm sure you did not see, some of which I wonder and ask if you caught or enjoyed any of their sets.
Okay. All right. And if we don't hit them, we're probably will. But I think some of my favorite things from this festival will surprise you.
Okay. So here we go. I'm assuming you did not go and see a band that we have talked about or act that we have talked about, No Name.
I did not. You know, generally, it's pretty tough for me to see anything that happens before, you know, 3:30 or 4.
Okay, so Lee Fields and the Expressions, also something you missed?
Was not even aware they were there.
Okay. Foxygen? Did you catch Foxygen?
I saw a song.
Okay.
It was not
how
good.
How about Electric Guest?
I did not see Electric Guest. Yeah, there we go.
Okay. Kay Flay, I'm sure you did not see.
I did not see, but I've seen her many times.
She's great. Yeah. How about Dr. Octagon?
Did not see Dr. Octagon. Heard that was good, though.
Okay. Thundercat.
Nope.
Wow. All right. Well, now we're getting to the big acts that you probably did see. Royal Blood is a group I just found out about.
Really?
Are you aware of them?
I not only am I aware of them, they produced my favorite record of 2014, I believe it was.
Uh-huh. I just found out about that record. A buddy of mine was like, "Have you ever heard Royal Blood?" I'm a big fan.
Yeah. Spend a lot of time with that first record because it's amazing. Okay. And really great. And they're really great. They're really great live. I don't know.
Okay. But you did not see them.
Royal Blood? I did see Royal Blood, yeah.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. That was definitely one of the best things I saw. That one was not a surprise because I've seen them live, I don't know, 6 or 7 times now, and they're always amazing. And I don't know if you know much about them beyond the record, but there's only 2 guys in the band.
Right. I did know that, actually.
A drummer and then a guy who mostly plays bass through that's kind of filtered through guitar pedals, and so he's kind of doing both at the same time. Sometimes he plays a guitar that's filtered through a bass pedal, from what I understand, but
that sounds awesome.
It's pretty amazing. And the drummer's really great. They're really tight, and live they're a thing, and they're a great festival band because they can win over a crowd that doesn't really know their
stuff. Doesn't know who they are.
Yeah.
I know that if I remember correctly, you're not a huge fan of his recorded music, but I have seen him live. And if you saw Bleachers, I would imagine you enjoyed it.
I did see some Bleachers. I saw Bleachers a few weeks ago when they were here.
Okay.
So I didn't feel the need to see the whole set because it really was the same.
Yeah, I'm sure it's the same. But he puts on a show, man.
He does. He does. And he screamed out, "Fuck Nazis," in the middle, which I thought was cool.
Word.
Apparently that's a controversial statement in 2017.
Did you catch Kay Tronada?
I did not catch Kay Tronada. I heard Kay Tronada was good.
What about Solange?
Solange was the best thing I saw.
Awesome.
Yeah, so great. She was playing against The Who, like, on kind of a smaller stage. And she, like, the band is great. They have this choreography thing that's happening on stage that's great. The costumes are great. She just comes out there and is cool as hell. Her voice sounded great. I mean, look, you know, we've talked at length about the new record. And I liked the new record, but live was another dimension. And I heartily recommend that you see Solange if you get the opportunity.
That's awesome to hear. Just awesome.
Yep. It was the last thing I saw and the best thing I saw.
All right. So you skipped The Who.
I actually did watch a little bit of The Who. That was one of the things I was excited to see because, you know, when you've been to the radio and you've been to a lot of festivals, eventually you've kind of seen all the stuff.
Uh-huh.
I never seen The Who before. So
wow.
So I was very excited to see The Who, and that quickly turned to, I saw The Who too late.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it was.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I mean,
did you catch Queens of the Stone Age?
You know, like if you see the Stones, in modern time, right? Roger Waters, who I saw recently.
Me
like
too.
You're aware that they're old. You know what I mean? Like you can see it.
I don't know if we talked about this. It may have been here, but I think a good comparison is it's like seeing like a Broadway review. You know, it's a stage show.
Yeah.
It's not seeing Roger Waters is not seeing Pink Floyd. It's seeing like a Broadway tour of Pink Floyd's music with one of their guys up there.
And Roger,
which is cool in its own way.
Roger's a little different because there's this massive visual aesthetic thing happening.
Oh yeah, huge.
Whereas like the Stones are a little bit more, you're just watching the band. But when you watch,
but even so, it's like a hits medley.
Yeah,
you
sure.
Know, it's you know. Which is cool in its own way.
And you're watching these guys and going, they're old, but man, they're out there doing it. They're still trying. And like, but you're aware that they're old, but like, you appreciate the effort. Whereas
you're not depressed.
Yeah. The Who was just like, oh, they're old.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised that they seem older than the Stones, for instance.
Yeah. They do. I don't know what to tell you. So,
I'll take
yeah.
your word for it.
So that was a bummer. We were kind of already thinking about positioning for Solange, and that made it mm-hmm. really easy. Like, I did not want to be there after about five or six songs.
Did you see any good hip hop over the course of the
weekend? I did. Schoolboy Q is really popular, as it turns out.
Uh-huh. He's really good.
And I have liked Schoolboy Q for a while. I didn't really know like what kind of a big deal he was, and I knew a couple of songs and was excited to hear those.
Mm-hmm.
People there knew all the songs. Like I was like, who are these people that know all the Schoolboy Q songs? But and there were a lot of them.
That's
so
cool.
So that was neat and kind of eye opening. And I would say that's what I got. Queens of the Stone Age canceled, by the way. That was you asked about them.
Wow,
they were replaced by Cage the Elephant.
Oh, okay. Well, that's pretty cool.
Who are, if you haven't seen them live, are like, I don't know. I think there's a perception of them that they're just sort of this kind of band that exists on the radio. And that's
no,
not,
they're like loud and raucous live.
Yeah. Like they're not entirely, that's not entirely unfair, but the live show is, yeah, like they really go for it. And so there's something to be seen there.
Yep. Alt J, no, yes.
I did not see Alt J because they were playing opposite Gorillaz. And I hadn't seen Gorillaz, but I heard Alt J was excellent. I've seen Alt J a lot of times, so
it's pretty incredible that two of the nine like top line, top build acts did not show.
Yeah, it's rough. Now Queens of Stone Age was in advance, like that's why they had a replacement. But
right.
Yeah, Tribe was not. So yeah, all in all, it did put a little bit of a damper on things. But that's the great thing about Outside Lands is like the vibe. Stuff of that festival I think is truly the best. And so when you're not all that into what's happening on stage, then you go find some gourmet thing to eat, or you run through the forest, or you go check
out
Winelands.
Things
or,
to do at yeah, Outside
Pod Save America is doing a podcast in the comedy tent, or Cocktail Magic, or you know, like it's
totally
it's great. You know, go sit in a tree. Yeah. All right, that's Outside Lands. Let's jump into Throne, should we?
Yes.
All right, so this was...
I'm fascinated to know what you thought, because, again, there was not a lot of action, per se, but I was wrapped. I was locked in.
Yeah, I mean, I guess if you're putting this episode into a category, you'd put it in kind of into the game piece moving category.
And the pieces, at this point, like... It's like in the last quarter of the game, you're allowed to move pieces at double the speed of earlier rounds.
Because we got to go. It's time for dinner.
And I appreciate that, because I don't need a month of John and Jorah taking a boat to the wall. Just put them there. That's fine with me.
Yeah. No, I'm with that. There's not as much time for travel. No, I actually did enjoy this one. It was one of those that kind of like a second watching helped a little bit. I did find it to be interesting. I'm enjoying the pieces where it's being moved. And I feel like we're now set up. Like it's hard to imagine this week's episode not being of the spectacular variety.
Well, and of course it is the penultimate episode, which is traditionally the heavy hitter.
Yeah. So like, you know, it's all it's definitely seems like we're moving in that direction pretty quickly. And look, I don't want to get into this binary thing of like, you know, is it an expository episode or is it an action episode, and action episodes are good and expository are bad. Like you can do either one. You can execute either one well or not as well. And I just thought this one was executed well, you know, lots of fun one-on-ones in this.
Oh, one. Tremendous. Arya and Sansa, like I've heard and read criticism of those scenes that I just don't understand, where like people are saying, oh, well, how come they have to reestablish their relationship? Like we know. And it's like, no, they haven't seen each other in years. Of course they have to reestablish their relationship. Of course Arya is taking a hard line and being a savage. Like what did these people think was going to happen when these characters came together? And I mean, look, right now we're poised where John and company are beyond the wall, likely to encounter some portion of the army of the dead. Arya is like hand on sword, ready to slice up Littlefinger. The God knows what Cersei is planning to do at this point, but like we have to imagine that A, the Hound and the Mountain are going to come together in some form or fashion, and B, her end game is not to be friends. So like, if it's not in this next episode or the one after, it's going to be a lot of heavy matzo balls hanging out there over our long wait till the next season.
Like, I mean, narratively, Cersei almost has to join this fight against the army of the dead, right? Like, because if she's not, then like, there's not that much left for her to do, right?
That's right. But that's kind of my point. It's like, they've positioned her to join. She kind of has to join, but like, there's no world in which I imagine that Cersei's joining this cause goes smoothly. She doesn't want to be friends. Like, fundamentally, she does not want to be friends. And
yeah,
so,
but I mean, look, all right. So to me, like, smooth or unsmoothly, like, I don't know. I mean, maybe I've been listening to too many Jon Snow speeches, but I get the sense that, you know, when the White Walkers come, like, friendship is going to be irrelevant. Like, it's just going to be, we're on the side of not dying with these people. And it seems like there's enough runway for that battle, you know, this war to take place over a few episodes, and then probably leave some time for the sorting out in at which point Cersei can become Cersei again. You know what I mean?
I think that's true. I also, given what we know about this series and the character, I just find it hard to believe that you would even be able to make it through an entire war with the Army of the Dead without Cersei getting ideas about something.
Yeah, possible. I think
And even if she doesn't, that tension of whether she will is something I am interested in.
I do think human concerns are just kind of going out the window for a couple episodes.
Well, maybe. But, you know, even – okay, so let's say they capture their dead body, bring it back, make their argument to Cersei. She joins the cause. Do you think we get a battle with the dead in the last episode of this season? I feel like that's still further away.
Well, I definitely feel like we get a battle of the dead in this episode of this next episode of the season.
Yeah, but that can't be more than a skirmish or all those guys would die.
Yeah, no, that's kind of the opening skirmish. And yes, I think probably the last episode will be no battle, and then at latest by episode 2 of the next season, there'll be a battle. I would guess you probably see episode 1.
I would agree. And what I'm saying to you is how I sort of imagine this season ending in thrilling fashion is armies of living and dead marching on one another, Jon Snow and Daenerys leading, and Cersei conniving somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, I just sort of envision it like I would not shock me at all if the last scene is they somehow get one of these White Walkers back to King's Landing. And, you know, and then Cersei kind of understands. That's how I see the season closing.
Interesting. That will be a fascinating thing. We're indeterminable but long distance from the resumption of this series.
Yeah, it's
going to be like, this is something we're going to have to reckon with, that, like, the next time you and I talk, Game of Thrones is going to be over, and we will not have a return date, but it's going to be at least a year.
Yeah. It's going to be a slog.
This is like those last couple, you know, the last season or so of The Wire, where it's like, uh-oh, we got to figure out what the best show on TV is going to be.
Yeah.
Because this thing's over.
And obviously it's Twin Peaks. I kid.
That's a weird sarcastic comment. I don't even know what to do with that.
Well, you know, there are people that for some reason think this. You know, so I'd start.
I don't think so, really. I think it's a very, very, it's a vocal minority.
Yes.
But it's an extreme minority.
With microphones and keyboards, for sure.
Yeah, but the Twin Peaks heads I know are like, this is trash.
Yeah, like the Emperor has no clothes. Come on. Whatever, you know, everybody loved Rome, too. Or not Rome. What was the Jude Law thing?
Oh, the Young Pope.
Young Pope, thank you. All right, I have a question for you.
Dead. You know he's dead, right? Spoiler alert.
I don't. I never finished it.
He's dead, so they need a new pope if they're doing that again.
That really was a spoiler. I have a Game of Thrones question for you that's sort of unrelated to... all right, I'm just going to ask it. You know, there, apparently another episode is leaked. You're a person that is on the internet, you know, watching stuff.
Nah.
Do you have any desire to see this early?
None.
Why?
I like the conversation.
Yeah, me too.
It is rare in 2017 in America that there is a cultural touchstone that a lot of people are locked in on that's on a time frame. And I enjoy that experience to the extent that we are still able to have it.
Yeah. There's something that's nice about A, doing it together, and B, parceling it out a little bit. And as torturous as it is for like another year to go by to have to wait for more episodes, like I'm excited about the conversation between then. I'll be excited about the build up to it. And like if this was just a Netflix thing and all of a sudden the final 8 episodes were available to me, you know, in a month's time or whatever. Like we'd watch them all in a weekend, and then it's literally gone. Yeah. So,
And I think the last thing I would want to do is have that conversation with you that we sometimes have off pod about like when is the right time to talk about the end of this.
Yeah. And what episode are you on? And if you're on 6, and then I'm on, you know, and like.
Look, obviously, we're a couple of guys that really like a good pop culture entertainment conversation, and you know, our ability to have those and be speaking the same language is in some part determined by our ability and timing of watching things. So I'm not railing against the machine. I'm not going to throw a temper tantrum that this is a thing that doesn't happen much anymore. But when it does happen, I'm going to cherish it.
Yeah. Do you have like a post Thrones routine? Do you jump into any like discussion analysis?
It's Ballers and Insecure. Sometimes I'll go back later and either after a second watching of Game of Thrones or prior to a second watching, I will watch the Ringer Twitter post show. And then, you know, I listen to a couple entertainment podcasts that discuss it. But
I was going
to
say Steve Guttenberg usually does have some hot takes, though.
What's that?
I said Steve Guttenberg usually does have some hot takes, though.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, on the Thrones.
Yeah. Yeah, all right.
So, you know, you can just watch Ballers. It'd be fine.
It's Ballers. This is like the second or third time sirens have gone by my house. I'm starting to get worried. Yes, Ballers and Insecure, because it's dessert. Game of Thrones is dinner. Ballers and Insecure is dessert. And if after that I'm ready for second dinner, I'll watch John Oliver.
Gotcha. Yeah, see, I watch the Sunday night stuff. We talked a little bit about those shows, and I'm Dying Up Here, which is sometimes in my Sunday night routine, depending on time. But then, you know, at that point, the recaps are up, and I like to check out Seppenwall, and I like to check out, like, the GQ and the Esquire recaps of Thrones, and, you know, I don't know. I just get into the conversation.
Yeah, no, I mean, I usually wait a little bit and let the conversation come to me, but I definitely engage with that stuff all week long.
Yeah. Bottom line here is we are nerds.
Is that something that was in question?
No. It's just sometimes it's good to drive that point home.
Cool.
All right, let's talk about your Sunday night dessert real quick.
Dessert.
Insecure has really been rolling this season.
Oh, it has. As we've talked about off pod and don't need to really dive into, I resent the implication that it wasn't cooking last season, but this is a great show. It's still a great show. It was a great show when it started. It's great now. I love it.
Yeah, and I have the nice thing is that you can see where the show is going to grow, you know, mm-hmm. like the deepening of secondary characters.
Right.
It's
doing second season stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's giving us a chance to get to know people in more interesting and complicated ways that we met last season. It's also just hysterically funny and super thoughtful and smart. I just, it's
yep. And this if, is what, if that this wasn't what enough to sell you, there's a little HBO Entourage Game of Thrones style gratuitous TNA.
Oh yeah, totally. Exactly. It's real. Like, this show has everything, and it also has, I mean, I know, I guess maybe I belabor this point, or we do, I don't know, but it's like a year later, Issa Rae is still a unique central character for a television show, and the characters are people of color and of an age and, you know, lifestyle that I don't think is appropriately represented. So it's just, it's fun to see people I know on TV that I don't usually see on TV, basically.
I'll tell you, I don't, you know, I don't know a lot of these people in real life, you know what I mean? And I wish I did. Like, that's the thing is, it's like, I lived in L.A., maybe I should have been hanging out in Inglewood. You know what I mean? Like, like, these people are cool. You know, I agree that it is nice to see a world that you don't see on television, and that seems wholly, I shouldn't say wholly, because it certainly, it deals with the larger world in some ways too, but it's not preoccupied with, we're showing you a world that you don't see on television that often. You know what I mean? That's just
it's just life.
Happenstance byproduct. It's just,
exactly. It's just the normal life of people we don't get to see enough on television. And it's the funny parts of in the same way that most great shows, you know, obviously you have the great shows that are the Game of Thrones is that are wild, fantastical stories that rely on the storytelling and drama and hysterics, basically. But most good talky shows are good because they ring true and because they tell stories we want to see. And it's especially refreshing when, in addition to just being a story we want to see, they're relatively unique stories in the medium. And you know, that's
it's an odd pairing with Ballers, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well,
like it works in that Ballers is a nice palate cleanser. You know what I mean? But like,
yeah,
like those, if it divorced from Following Thrones, like right. It just be weird to me to watch those two shows together.
They're fundamentally different shows from like a broad philosophy perspective, in that Insecure is doing and saying things every week that hopefully are relevant to people and the world, and Ballers is Entourage with balls.
Yeah. Although I have to say, like, Lawrence on Insecure is jacked enough that he could be on Ballers. Like, if he switched places with Denzel Washington's kid and then started playing the wide receiver,
he'd be a more realistic wide receiver.
Yeah,
actually.
Like, I don't think you'd notice.
But I have to say, it's not just him. Every man that has appeared on Insecure
is really jacked. Yep,
is like a beautiful, like, 25-year-old Adonis. Yeah. Like every dude.
Yeah.
And frankly,
That's low key why they call it Insecure. It's really just designed to make you feel insecure.
Yeah, maybe. But the women are doing just fine as well, by the way. But it really it's astonishing, and in a refreshing way, you know, the opposite of something like Entourage, where all these women they bring on are just like beautiful faces. Like, obviously, you know, Lawrence is a well-developed character and everything, but there's a lot of man candy on Insecure, which, you know, even though it's not necessarily my favorite treat, is it's funny.
And I just, like, Lawrence is a character, I feel like, really shouldn't be man candy. You know what I mean? Like, just, it doesn't totally fit with the vibe of his, like, you know,
well,
went to Georgetown, sort of nerdy, like, you know what I mean?
Isn't it? Is that, like, he's this hulking man candy thing that his own picture of himself is basically like a chill nerd.
Yeah, it's true.
And that's that. I mean, if we want to talk about the most recent episode, mild spoiler alert, he gets himself into a sexual situation that, like, his inner nerd is kind of not capable of handling.
Right. They're looking like, at him as full on man candy. And he's like, exactly. Wait, I'm a nerd.
He's like, oh, I don't really know how to do that.
Yeah, that was, you know, the. It really is like that's we kind of joked about the TNA, but that's a great example of Insecure and their ability to take scenes like that that in the hands of a ballers would just be TNA and make it something that's like emotionally real.
With know? Ballers, it's just Terrell Suggs, you know, banging some chick on a washing machine.
That happened.
Yeah, exactly. That's the difference between Insecure and Ballers is Terrell Suggs and like an NFL hanger-on on a washing machine versus like Lawrence's complicated and sort of mishappening sexual adventure.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. Next week in the pod, we'll be talking about how the stacked washer and dryer setup has killed washing machine sex. but this week...
That's so funny. There's a lot of good washing machine sex in movies from like 1985 to 1997.
Yeah, it's going the way of phone booth sex. Let's talk about Netflix's Ozark, which is a show that's... it's weird. Like, it's been gaining a lot of buzz... But it's kind of like retro buzz. Ozark was kind of panned in the initial round of reviews, and then there's sort of been this kind of like vocal legion of fans who really caught on it, and I think people are kind of starting to reconsider. Is that fair?
I think so. I don't remember if it was. Was the beginning of Breaking Bad the critical response at all like this?
The Breaking Bad was pretty well received from the jump.
Because I mean, I would imagine you would agree Breaking Bad is sort of like the clear touchstone for this. If you're going to pick something that like, if you pick something that paved the way for Ozark.
Yeah, it's definitely from that tree. I wouldn't say it's derivative, but yeah, there are definitely things that remind you of it.
It's of that, you know, family, you know?
Yeah. In a way that like, genius, we like the Amazon show Sneaky Pete. And I would say that's also sort of the Breaking Bad family of shows.
Uh-huh. You know? Yeah, dark drama with some sort of smirking laughs and
like crime caper. You know what I mean? Like it's a crime caper.
And at the center of it, a man who we want or hope to at least at some point believe is like a decent human who's trying to do what he can to like be cool and take care of his family and have good motives, but is definitely teetering on the edge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know that there's this idea that people are tired of complicated anti-hero bad men stories and maybe they are, I don't know, but this one sure is fun, you know?
And Jason Bateman's great.
Bateman is riveting. Yep. I agree. Lauren Linney is also great. You know what I mean?
I don't like her. I don't know what it is. It's not in this. I have a weird Laura Linney block.
Yeah.
Something about her just rubs me the wrong way. Mm. But that's really, really near here nor there about this actual show, because she sells it. She is sort of an Gunnish character. To bring it back to Breaking Bad, like she's got her own complications and positives and negatives, if you will.
Yeah, I think she's like, imagine if Skyler started as like mid to late period Skyler.
Right. You know, that's exactly what I mean?
Like,
that's right.
That's her jump off point is that she's
already down the
Skyler
wise.
Road. She's wise. She's, you know, she's wise and crafty already. So.
Yeah. But I do think, and I'm pretty sure I only watched the first two. But I do think we're setting up where sort of the whole family is going to get to have their misadventures now that they're out in the Lake of the Ozarks. For people who don't know, it's a Netflix show where Jason Bateman is laundering money and essentially is forced to escape Chicago with his family to go to the Lake of the Ozarks in Missouri. and sort of hide out and launder money. And the setup is, I guess what I'm saying is, in two episodes, the setup is extremely sound, and I'm prepared for the shenanigans to come.
Yeah, like it's a very strong pilot, I think. Like you get where the show's going. The tone is set from right there.
Right. You see basically what it is. You see basically the sorts of things that are likely to happen. So it's not. And even you're right. I wouldn't say it's derivative of Breaking Bad per se. It also is not breaking ground. I don't think. I mean,
it feels a little in the Showtime zone.
Uh huh.
You know, where it's like,
I think that's that could just as easily be called the Netflix zone.
You know, wildly entertaining, but would you call it great television? I don't know that it's great television, but it's super watchable.
It's hard to say, but I do think the critical response short-sold the performances and the like broad outline, the conceit, I guess,
yeah,
which I think is strong.
And look, I'm three episodes in. You said you're two. Like it,
yeah.
It could broaden and deepen and become something like really rich. Like that potential exists.
And I would add to that that like the critical response seemed to be there's nothing here, and I don't get that, because again, like we said, it doesn't. This is not a show where you watch and you're. It's not like what we just said about Insecure, where you watch and you're like, "Whoa, new stories, exciting characters. I don't know. I've never seen stuff like this." It's like, okay, I've definitely seen stuff like this. I have an idea of where it's going, but that doesn't make a show. I mean, if we really want to talk about it, that's 99% of the history of TV.
Yeah.
And what makes good TV shows, yes, the truly sparklingly original ones can stand out in a way that maybe an Ozark never can. But what makes good TV, good to very good, is good writing and performances from the actors and thoughtful directing. And
well, I would also say what makes good TV is a show that you – a world – that you want to spend time in and people that you want to spend time in it with, because that's what allows for the infiniteness of story. You know what I mean? Because ultimately, you know, most of these shows you're trying to crank out 100 episodes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And here's the other thing about that is, like you just said 15 minutes ago about Young Pope, there are fantastic, you know, visually explosive things that you don't, the world is not somewhere you want to be enough to ever go back and finish it. And I think, you know, based on two episodes, I have a hard time seeing Ozark being that.
Right.
I'm pretty sure I'm going to want to go back and finish it and find out where these characters and stories go.
I'm still hung up on the Young Pope being dead.
Yeah, sorry about that, dude. But on the other hand, no, maybe it's okay. That means the next
there was
Young Pope will
zero
be
chance I was going back to watch the Young Pope for the reasons you just said. Yeah, like it just wasn't happening. I did finish Big Little Lies. I don't know if we ever talked about that.
I don't know if we did. I loved it.
Yeah, it was good. Yeah. All right. I feel like on that note, maybe we should jump into homework.
Yeah. Man, did we already make it all the way through everything? I guess we did.
We kind of did it, and that's sort of why I was doing it, is because, you know, we've talked about on the air, I think, and off the air, for many years, the elusive 45-minute podcast.
Yeah.
This is our week.
This could happen. So let's start with the let's lay out the logistics here, because as we may or may not have mentioned on the podcast, I am about 60 hours from getting on a flight to Hong Kong, from where I will go to Borneo.
Wait, there's no direct flights to Borneo?
No. I'm meeting my parents in Hong Kong, and then we fly together to Kota Kinabalu, Malaysia, comma, Borneo. And or maybe Borneo, comma, Malaysia? I don't know. Anyway, I'm going to be in the jungle for 2 weeks. Next week, I'm going to be deep in the jungle. The week after that, I'm going to be, it seems, if I understand my itinerary properly, on some sort of beach where I may, in fact, have available internet. So with any luck, approximately 2 weeks from today, we will have another pod for you. We'll have the end of Game of Thrones, which, of course, we'll discuss. We'll discuss, you know, whether or not I've contracted a rare and fatal disease malaria, in the jungle of Malaysia. And some other things, one of which is, obviously, we're podcast fans. Hopefully, if you're listening, you're a podcast fan. I want to recommend a podcast. I'm very interested to hear what you think. I would not recommend necessarily the most recent episode, but the podcast Road Trippin', which is Richard Jefferson of the Cleveland Cavaliers, long of the NBA, and it was Channing Frye throughout the season was his co-host, along with Allie Clifton, who is a Cavs TV reporter. And I think it's fascinating. If you're a sports fan, or even just the sort of person who likes to hear professionals talk about what they do, they have a ton of fun. They drink consistently on the podcast.
Oh, we should try that.
Yeah. I mean, I think you know I'm open to that. But it's not as – it wouldn't – like the clinking of their wine glasses is sort of what makes it. Like you and I just taking Jameson shots by ourselves on either end of a Skype call is probably not as
– What if we like yell out, salut, you know, in the middle?
Yeah, just like establish some show drinking games. Like every time – yeah, every time, you know, you say I refuse to watch that superhero movie, you know, to take a shot. But anyway, I think it's worth listening to. The last few episodes have been different because it's summer. It's Richard Jefferson sort of in his summer home in L.A. with friends of his. If you go back a few episodes, you can catch one with Channing Frye. But even if you don't, I think this is fascinating on a lot of levels because Richard Jefferson is obviously a current NBA player, but he talks a lot about how, you know, this is something he's doing because he's trying to figure out a way to use – his skills in communication to have, you know,
he's going
to
be on television. Like, I don't really, you know, that seems like almost a lock. Is that weird?
Yeah, he will have a TV job almost certainly if he wants one, or he'll have a podcast empire. Who knows? But I do think he's a fun and interesting sort of podcast host, even though he kind of has been smart to have professionals be the host per se. He is the lead voice clearly, and he drives the conversations and discussions they have with guests and talks about his life, talks about his career. I think it's really good, I would like to hear your thoughts.
Do you think LeBron James will have a podcast before you die?
Yes.
Interesting.
I don't know that. I don't know about podcast. I think he will. I think his will probably be video, but I think he will have a video subscription situation where often
it'll probably be some sort of subscription situation.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course. All right. All right. So Road Tripping is one. I'm going to assign a movie for you guys to check out. It's called Heart of Darkness, and I think it'll be perfect for your trip.
That's the Apocalypse Now documentary.
Maybe watch that on the plane. I'm not really assigning that. I'm just being a jerk. We would like you to watch the finale of Orphan Black. Just bring this up because it's my fault because I was supposed to do that this week and I didn't.
That's right.
So we're going to talk about it whenever the next pod will be. And I would imagine probably more than the finale. I think we'll talk about the show as a whole. What worked and what didn't. Well,
although I do want to talk about the finale,
and then I'm gonna quiz you on the plot. I'm gonna ask you to explain the Neo-Lucidus dyad and how they're all connected. And yeah,
well, it's a good thing I got
some ready.
Jungle reading time to bone up on that. I am not ready for that quiz right now, and I just watched the finale within the last 3 days. But yeah, that's I'll see what I can do to break it all down for you.
Okay.
I feel like there was another thing on our list of homework.
Those are all I wrote down. So So yeah.
All right.
I think it's
This is something I'm going to do. I am like locked in, ready for some plane time. I'm going to watch the Louis C.K. show Horace and Pete. I believe there's another season in the works. I believe. I'm not 100% sure. but I've sort of avoided it because people talk about it being sort of a downer. But also I keep hearing it referenced and, you know, its quality discussed offhandedly on podcasts I listen to, and I think it's time for me to take the leap. So I'm comfortable being the tip of the spear on that, but if you feel like you can get into it a little bit, I'm going to watch hopefully all, but at least some of that in the next couple weeks.
Where are you getting that?
You got to buy it from him.
Okay. Well, that answers that. All right. And then,
but
you know,
maybe like maybe you know a friend who bought it or something. You know what I mean? Like maybe there's a you might be able to finagle a free watch.
All right. Well, whatever. I'm not. I'll pay for it. That's fine. I just couldn't remember where it was. All right. So there's that. And
it's
then
not on a platform. It's
and then
it's just
right. It said it's like his website or whatever. Right.
Yep. Yep.
And then we were supposed to talk about Hard Knocks, and we forgot to do that.
I knew there was something we were missing, and I meant to transition right into it from Game of Thrones, because some of the great moments on Hard Knocks in the first two episodes were Gerald McCoy and company talking about Game of Thrones. So I guess, look, we can do a real dive in on Hard Knocks on our next episode. That can be another homework assignment. But I just want to say off the bat, every year on Hard Knocks, you get a sort of young fringe roster guy that they build into a big character, and you get a well-established veteran who they build into a big character.
Yep. And the quarterback. And
this year, you also get Jameis, but I'm talking about like not the Jameis Winstons of the team. The two guys they have for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, Riley Bulla, the fringe linebacker who they call Joe Dirt and whose mom came to town to defend him and say that he looks more like Fabio. He is incredible. And Gerald McCoy is my new favorite athlete.
Like in the world?
Who's ever been more charming and wonderful in two episodes of sports television than Gerald McCoy? Like, first of all, he's a superhero dork. Second of all, he has the biggest, most welcoming, friendliest smile that is just plastered on his face at all times, as far as I can tell. And he's an absolute monster. Yeah. And
his kids are like ridiculously cute. Like ridiculously cute.
Oh, God, so cute. And he has these moments on the show where he, grinning ear to ear, calmly and delightedly describes absolutely taking apart opposing offensive linemen and murdering quarterbacks in the most like delightful, lovable way. I just love Gerald McCoy.
Yeah, I have some very real concerns about this show making me like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and I'm not interested in doing that.
Yeah, totally.
I can see it headed down that path, and I'm not into it.
Yeah, I mean, like, there's a lot, you know, the Jameis Winston issue is a complicated one, and just in terms of being able to root for that guy. But I gotta say, I can see why his teammates love him, because he's a gregarious, positive force around that team.
Yep. Yep. And they're going to be pretty good this year, and I'm already annoyed. All right.
Good.
So.
Oh, yeah. You got to compete with them. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we didn't compete with them last year. They were pretty good last year, too. So, you know, watch Hard Knocks. It's fun. I'm pretty sure I'm on the record on this podcast, but I'll definitely say now, like, I cannot stand preseason football. I refuse it out of hand. Like, I literally will not watch a minute of it. God, I love Hard Knocks. So.
Oh, no. Hard Knocks is every bit as unmissable as preseason football is missable.
Yep. And that's all the way.
I say that as a fan of a team whose number two overall quarterback just had an incredible preseason debut. Like, F it. Screw the whole business. It's worthless.
Yep. You know our teams play week one. Get into that.
Yeah, man. I know.
He's avoiding bringing it up. All right.
Like it's like anyone who starts making the Kyle Shanahan is gone, the Falcons offense will struggle argument. It's like they got a good warm-up game. really ease into the regular season.
Yeah. You know, I don't know about that. I mean, well, unless whoever is out there, whether it's Trubisky or Mike Glennon,
it's going to be Glennon.
You know, yeah, there is that chance of they're just going to brain fart and throw five interceptions and it's a walk. But I have a feeling it's the NFL. It'll be a battle.
It's not going to be a battle.
Yes. And look, if you think
this feels like you just hustling me for points when we finally bet on the game right now.
If you think the Sarkisian Shanahan thing is a huge drop off, just remember that the defense is going to get a lot better. They're real young, and they added Dontari Poe and basically added Desmond Trufant, who's one of the top five cornerbacks in the league, and didn't play for half the season.
The Falcons are legit, and by the way, say what you want about Kyle Shanahan, like, no one ever argued that Matt Ryan isn't pretty good.
Yeah.
And no one ever argued that Julio Jones is one of the two or three best receivers in the league, and no one's arguing that they don't have talented running backs and a worthwhile offensive line. Like, they may not be what they were last year. We'll see the impact of Kyle Shanahan, but just hands down, the talent is too good for them not to be pretty good.
Yeah, like, the case against the Falcons is just, I've seen what happens to other teams. That's the whole case. Like,
yeah,
I've seen what happens when you lose the Super Bowl. I've seen teams that were, you know what I mean? Like regression to the mean or something or other, you know what I mean? But literally the whole team is back plus. Look, it was the same for the Panthers the year prior, and they,
everything you just said is true, but that doesn't mean those arguments are invalid. Yeah. Those are valid arguments.
But like that's the only case is patterns.
I agree.
It's not looking at the roster. That's for sure.
It's one coach and it's circumstantial.
Yeah. You know, but that's the reality for them is like questions will follow that team until they win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. I mean, welcome to the NFL.
Yep, indeed. All right. On that note, let's get the hell out of here. Safe travels. Don't get kidnapped by spider monkeys. Or
if there is not a podcast in 2 weeks, I either don't have reliable internet or have been kidnapped.
Do you know how to wield a machete?
I know the broad strokes. I'm not. Machete, but I think I can manage.
All right.
Look, I can handle myself. Okay. If it goes down in the jungle, I can handle myself.
Where are you sleeping? Like, legitimately, are you like camping in the jungle, or are you? You know, they're 4-star hotels. You're kind of posted up at this whole way.
I think it's going to be in between. They're not 4-star hotels. I think we're largely in places where that sort of thing does not exist, but they are, I would imagine they are relatively, I don't know how to describe it, but I luxury is probably too strong, but I would imagine they are, comfortable, sorts of wilderness lodges.
All right.
I'll have more on that in 2 weeks, live from the beach in Borneo.
That's what they call a tease, ladies and gentlemen. All right, let's get out of here.
Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling, and the Jell-O is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.